By the time he was in his early 30s, Robbie Robertson had already cemented his place in rock and roll history. He played in Bob Dylan's backing band when Dylan went electric and wrote classic songs including The Wait and The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down with the band. And then, in 1976, Robbie and the band called it quits, performing one final show for their fans.
We did 8 years in bars, dives, dance halls, 8 years of concerts in stadiums, arenas. We gave our final concert. We called it The Last Waltz. And you put the load right
on me. That was Robbie speaking in Martin Scorsese's documentary, The Last Waltz, which documented the band's final show. In the decades since leaving the band, Robbie's put out multiple solo albums, written a memoir, and worked as a music supervisor and composer on several of Scorsese's films. This month, he released his latest solo record, Cinematic. I sat down with Robbie to talk about how the album fits into his career as a whole, and he started off by looking back to his childhood, when he often traveled with his mother, who was Mohawk, to the Six Nations Reserve in Canada, where she grew up.
We went between Toronto and Six Nations regularly, and when we did go to visit the relatives there, I thought, these people, they got it made. This is the way to live. There was such community. Everybody was together. They could do things that nobody in the city could do. My cousins were like, that was magical to me. And I've said before, you know, they didn't climb a tree. They ran up a tree. I was in awe of them. But the big thing was, it seemed like everybody played music or sang or dance. They had to provide their own entertainment. And this was my first experience of being that close to somebody playing music. And it just ran chills down my spine. And I thought, I've got to get in on this. I got to become part of this club. And I need to play music too.
And I mean, to say the least, you have for more than 50 years now, and some of the work that you've done since you left the band has touched on your Mohawk heritage. Tell us a little bit about that work that you've done.
Well, they were doing a documentary some years ago called The Native Americans, and they asked me to do the music for it. And I thought, wow, what an opportunity this is to revisit this part of my heritage. And I thought, I know stuff about this. I was very connected to the community of North America, of, you know, people's skins. We were all skins. And so I knew artists that were so terrific and people didn't know about them. And I thought, I'm going to pull them in, work with these people, and share this with a world that they don't even know about that. And so I made an album called Music for the Native Americans, and they used the music in that documentary. Then PBS came to me and said, we want to do a documentary on you exploring your Native heritage. So I did an album called Contact from the Underworld of Red Boy, and I continued that journey, and it was even more fun than the first one. But this time, instead of doing the music for a film, the film was about me making this music.
Did that strengthen your connection to your indigenous family and culture? Has it gotten stronger as you've gotten older?
It was never disconnected, but when I went out into the world and was playing in a rock and roll band and traveling around, you know, the Chitlin circuit in the South and everything, I wasn't in close contact anymore because I was gone. But, you know, when it's your heritage, you can't shake it off, you know. But it was interesting. For a period of time, my mom had said to me, her mother passed away when she was around 15 years old, and she was sent to Toronto to live with an aunt there. And the aunt told her, listen, it's a different world here in the city, and be proud you're an Indian, but be careful who you tell. So when she told me that, you know what I mean? It pushed a button in me in a way that I thought, oh, I need to. So, but anyway, my heritage, you know, my mother is Mohawk and my father was Jewish. And that combination, when I was growing up, when people would say, oh, I'm Italian or I'm Irish or I'm this or that and everything. And they say, what are you? And I would say, well, I'm half Indian and half Jewish. And it was like, oh, you're what? And so I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't be bringing this up too often.
All right. So back to music here for a second. In the band, you spent time playing in Bob Dylan's backing band in the 1960s. Did you learn anything specific from touring and working with Dylan?
Well, I've joked about this in the past, but I learned how to play guitar and not look at my fingers because I needed to duck when people were throwing stuff at us. We got booed every night that we played, all over North America, all over Australia, all over Europe, every night, people booed us. And I'd never heard of anything like this before.
Why? Why were they? I mean,
they didn't want Bob Dylan. You know, he was like a leader, a king of folk music, and now he wanted to play rock and roll. And people didn't want him to make that change. But the change was up to him. And he, you know, he did what he wanted. But it was an incredible experience. We played music and eventually had to say, the world is wrong. We're right. This is good. And I don't care what anybody says. And time proved that we were right and the world was wrong. That's a pretty good feeling.
What was there a catalyst that led you to say, I mean, how many attempts on stage at getting, you know, pelleted with tomatoes did it take for you all to kind of go, okay, we've got this, we're right? Or was there a turning point where you said, this show is the moment where we know where it's something's beginning to stick?
You know, when this kind of reaction is happening, you would normally, what somebody would do is say, well, the audience is not appreciating this. Let's make some changes. And they told Bob, you need to get rid of these guys. They're ruining your career. They're ruining your music. Get rid of them. And he didn't listen to anybody. And all he said was, let's play louder and faster.
Speaking of louder and faster, when you listen to music today, and I know, again, we could spend weeks probably talking about this, do you listen to anything specific today? Is there a type of genre or type of music that you're particularly intrigued by?
I believe there's always great music going on. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's not like it was when the blah, blah, you know, all of that stuff. There is always great music. And there is so much today that I completely enjoy. And, you know, I really enjoyed the other night. I was at the, you know, Saturday Night Live's.
You went to the premiere?
I went to the season opener of that, and Billie Eilish was performing, and she was just terrific. And I've been paying attention to what she's doing now for a little while anyway, and then to be able to see her perform, it's really good. She's terrific.
We're in a moment now. I mean, it's almost hard to describe the political moment we're in, but you think back to the 60s and what everything that was going on then and how Dylan's music and a lot of the music of the time wasn't just about sounding good. It had a really powerful message, a big political message behind it. You would even call it protest music to a certain extent. Do you think that in this moment we're in right now that there's enough of that coming through in music?
it's a different time. And, you know, in that period, in the that part of the 60s and 70s, music was the voice of the generation. And they gathered around this music. And people made music distinctly in regard to those people that it meant so much to them. We're living in a different time now. And the music today is, a lot of it is great fun, you know, just really entertainment. And people aren't speaking out about this situation as much. I have found that on my new album, Cinematic, that there are some songs that I just couldn't help but dig into a place that is reflective of that period, and you can't help but it be reflective of the time that we're living in right now, too.
You almost have to be in a lot of ways. When you put out music as the band, you were credited as the main songwriter, and other bandmates were usually the main vocalists. Do you describe yourself when you're making music as a collaborator?
You know, like I was saying, on this new record, the first track on it, I do a duet with Van Morrison.
I hear you paint houses. You're a gun for hire. I hear you paint houses. Down to the wire.
He's just one of the greatest ever, you know, and I work with Glenn Hansard on it, and Citizen Cope, and J.S. Andora. And because this music is, part of it's in The Irishman, Martin Scorsese's new movie, and it's some of it, this song Once We're Brothers that's on this album, is the name of the documentary that they've made based on my book, Testimony. So all these things, you know, they just started coming together and connecting in a way that I've never had before in my experience. You usually say, okay, well, put this over here and try to concentrate and focus on that one. This, on this situation, I just embraced all of it. I opened my arms and said, all of these things are contributing to this. And like I said, you know, I got a song in there called Praying for Rain. And it is reflective of the times that we're living in. And, you know, climate change is such an important thing. And the fact that there's people that just deny science is boggling to me. And I have a song on the record, too, called Let Love Rain, that is reminiscent to me of John Lennon back in the day, you know, who was dedicating himself to love and peace. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is good medicine. A lot of what we're experiencing today is really disturbing in the fact that it's kind of the opposite of that. So, you know, I'm not out preaching or anything, but I can't help but it seep out in some kind of way of this part of the truth.
You mentioned Scorsese's next movie, The Irishman. Scorsese also directed The Last Waltz, which mm-hmm. was the documentary of the band's final concert in 1976. So you have a long relationship with him. What's your process like for working on a project with someone like that?
It varies a lot over the years. After the Last Waltz, he asked me to work on the music for Raging Bull. And that experience, it hooked me in the power of what music can have with the picture and the picture with the music. And it's different what Marty does than anybody else in movies. He has a connection to music, and that's why I asked him to direct The Last Waltz, because I could sense this. But every movie that I've worked on with him has been a different chore. And that's what's exciting about it. And the score that I've done with The Irishman, and also some of the music that I helped choose for the movie that plays into the different periods that it takes place in. It takes place over many decades, The Irishman. And so, you know, we were figuring out what really, you know, fits in, you know, naturally with something, and what is beautiful counterpoint to some, all of that stuff. So it's just a fantastic experience what we're able to do together, and we're already talking about the next movie.
I can't wait. The song Once We're Brothers reflects on your relationship with your bandmates in the band and the fact that you had a falling out with several of them.
Once we're brothers, brothers no more. We lost our connection after the war.
Why did you decide to write about those tensions on this album?
I didn't ever have a falling out with any of the guys in the band. Years after we weren't together anymore, Levon, who was my dear brother, and I started playing with him when I was 16 years old, and he was from the Mississippi Delta and I was from Canada, and we hooked up and we had such a fantastic bond. But years later, I don't know, something happened with Levon. He hit some hard times and some bitterness came out, and you know, and he blamed me for his problems. But I loved Levon. We just had a different point of view. And while we were together, Levon and I never had a cross word. I never had a bad word with any of the guys in the group. We were such a connected brotherhood. I just hold it precious.
Are you planning on taking a break anytime soon?
I've got a lot of, I'm writing volume two of my memoir, and I've really got to roll up my sleeve and get down to business on that. So I'm going to have to put off the sipping lemonade part till a little bit later.
Robbie Robertson's newest album, Cinematic, is out now. Robbie, thank you so much for joining us on The Takeaway.
It was great to be on The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.